Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me today. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for tuning in. If you just did, thank you. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you with us. Jim Copeland is with us, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad to have him back with us. Jim's an old friend of ours and a longtime member of our brain trust, as are many of the people in his organization. He's the director of the Manhattan Institute's Center for Legal Policy. And as I said, he's our good friend. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here, Jim.
It's good to have you here. One of the things that all of us touch in some way just about every day, we're affected in some way, are what's called consumer protection laws. And you know a lot about these laws, and we probably do too. But we probably don't think about them because it's sort of the protection that we get that we really don't always know about, right?
That's right. And sometimes these are worthwhile laws.
Give us some examples.
When they're not abused, but they've been abused by our friends in the trial bar.
Yeah.
And really what it is, it's to try to keep you safe. It's to try to make sure that you're not being sold a false bill of goods. The old rule under the common law of tort and contract was always caveat emptor,
right?
Basically, let the buyer beware. And mm-hmm. What people found was, in our complicated economy, you better get what you're promised. And so at the federal level, you know, they set up what basically is under the jurisdiction of the Federal Trade Commission, and they try to make sure that, you know, whatever's advertised is in fact what's actually delivered. And they specifically decided there not to allow for what's called a private right of action, or letting individuals sue if they think they've been fraudulently sold a false bill of goods. And so in the federal law, it has to go through the Federal Trade Commission for you to be able to sue for consumer fraud.
What would be an example of someone wanting to sue for consumer fraud?
Well, let's say, for instance, someone's advertising you're going to get a V8 engine, and it's actually a V6 engine.
Oh, okay. That's pretty dramatic.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I'm trying to use an example that's pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's always that old Seinfeld episode where the guy is selling what he claims is low-fat yogurt, and in fact it's high-fat yogurt, and he's just calling it low-fat yogurt, right? So, I mean, they're genuine cases where people are told lies, and, you know, our market economy works. We have free exchange, and that means that both parties are better off, but that requires that the individuals not be under the use of force or fraud or duress. And
well, like, for example, let's say that one of the hamburger places just says, you know, our fries are cooked only with healthy oils. We're not using the tallow, the animal fat, that kind of thing. And then it comes to come to find out maybe 10% of what they use is animal tallow. Those kinds of things. We deserve to be protected from those kinds of things, don't we?
And these are the types of suits that actually we're starting to see. The problem is it's not clear that the representations are actually being made that are false, and that's where we're running into problems. We're running into problems because what happened in the 1960s was a lot of states started setting up what were called their mini FTC acts, or Federal Trade Commission Acts, mm-hmm. consumer protection laws. And the FTC, the federal government, in general encouraged this because the FTC didn't have enough staff to you know, police everything, so the states could do it. But a lot of these states set up private rights of action. And the concern is that a lot of the private rights of action don't have the same protections that you have in a normal tort lawsuit. And that's because a lot of times these statutes were drafted intended that it was the state attorney's general offices that would be bringing the suits, and that would provide a necessary check on the sorts of things that you'd need to show, because instead of actually having an injured victim like you do in a normal tort mm-hmm. lawsuit, mm-hmm. He's really looking out after the public interest.
The public at large. But when we come back, we're gonna boil this down a little closer to you and how it affects you as not only as a consumer, but maybe even as a small business owner. And we'll do that right after these messages with our good friend Jim Copeland. He's with the Manhattan Institute. It's 20 Till. Stay with us.
But I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance and use it to your advantage. And don't forget to check out my blog while you're there. It'll make all the things that we do every day just a little bit handier for you. And if you want to, we'll send all that to you. We'll send you our blog. And all you have to do is come and subscribe, because we don't send it to you unless you ask us to. Jim Copeland. I started to introduce you as Walter, but I know you don't mind that. Jim Copeland is our friend, ladies and gentlemen. He's the director of Manhattan Institute Center for Legal Policy, and he works very closely with another good friend of ours, Walter Olson. And I was just reading Walter's name in part of the material that I have here for you, Jim. You and Walter recently conducted you hosted. I guess, co-hosted a conference on consumer protection laws recently, didn't you?
We did on this very topic, and I'm flattered to be confused with Walter Olson.
He's a good
my
man.
Colleague who's been working on this issue for about 20 years. We hosted it 2 weeks ago here in New York, and really had some of the best lawyers in private practice, as well as some of the best thinkers in the academy and in the policy realm, talking about this. And actually, listeners who want to go to our website, the Manhattan Institute website, that is, www.manhattan-institute.org, if you go under events, you'll see there that you can get an MP3 form. You can listen to every panelist and every basically the entire conference is there broken down by speakers. So if you want to hear more about this topic, I encourage you to do that. And Victor Schwartz, our keynote speaker for lunch, who's the general counsel for the American Tort Reform Association and a partner at Shook, Hardy & Bacon, he's hilarious. So I'd encourage you especially to listen to his comments. But
all, right, and
all of them, I think, are enlightening.
That's at manhattan-institute.org, right?
That's right. And we'll have a published written transcript in the future, but that's
okay.
Obviously not done yet. And I'll link to that on our www.pointoflaw.com website
okay.
as well. I'm meaning to do that shortly. So.
All right. By the way, Jim, you'll find this interesting. On this day in 1965, the Federal Cigarette Labeling and Advertising Act was signed into law. It required health care or health warnings on cigarette packages. So the health warnings, part of what we're talking about right now, was part of the what was put into law as of this day in 1965. How about that?
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So it's timely that you're here. Jim, how does the consumer protection laws impact small businesses? How does it get down into our world?
It basically is ultimately being abused now. I mean, the problem that we're focusing on is it's being abused by the plaintiff's bar, precisely because it doesn't have the protections we have in the other realms of tort law, which are being abused as well, of course. But with consumer protection, normally you have to have a plaintiff who's actually relied on a... If you have a common law tort claim, you have to have relied on the fraud. You have to have been injured by the fraud somehow. Mm-hmm. You have to show that you've somehow been damaged by the fraud. You have to show that the fraud somehow caused your injury. And you don't have to show these things.
Do you have to prove that it was intentional, too?
In general, you have to show it was intentional or at least reckless. It can't just be an accidental misstatement.
Or a typo or something like that.
Just a mistake, exactly. Yeah. So all of these are requirements under the traditional law. None of these are requirements under a lot of the states' consumer protection laws. Massachusetts mm-hmm. being the worst, but we've seen in Illinois, we've seen in New Jersey, other states moving in that direction. And so what you're seeing is for most of our common everyday products, really laughable suits. The most recent that I've focused on is the one against Kentucky Fried Chicken, which was filed in the District of Columbia under the District of Columbia Consumer Protection Law. And basically what they're saying is that the fact that it used trans fatty acids was not adequately disclosed. The trans fatty acids are bad for you, and the Kentucky Fried Chicken on its ads called its food the best food or something like this. Mm-hmm. Now realize, they're not making the argument that we saw in some of these McDonald's types of cases that they've actually gotten fat or had heart disease because of the trans fatty acids. They're merely saying Kentucky Fried Chicken didn't say we're using trans fatty acids in our product. And it's really a betrayal of common sense. Nobody goes, whether you're getting original or extra crispy, nobody goes to Kentucky Fried Chicken thinking you're getting healthy food.
Right.
So if in fact Kentucky Fried Chicken says we're not using, you know, animal fats or trans fatty acids or what have you, and it's not animal fats, they basically left animal fats. All the fast food restaurants left animal fats about 15 years ago,
right,
because an institution called the Center for the Science in the Public Interest was raising a big stink about it. They went to partially hydrogenated vegetable oil, which is basically the standard across most fast food restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, Center for Science in the Public Interest was advocating the use of those oils, saying, well, they have to use these or the food tastes rancid, and there's no evidence that it causes heart disease. Well, it turns out it looks like there is evidence that this can cause heart disease. Go figure. So now the same group is actually behind the lawsuit that's trying to get rid of these oils and go toward the what they used to say would cause rancid foods.
There's no shortage of righteous indignation in the United States, folks. Absolutely. And they're taking that to court these days. Quick break, right back with Jim Copeland. When we come back, I'm going to ask Jim what you and I could do to make sure we stay out of court with our promises. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 17 till. It's 7 till. I did this yesterday, didn't I? It's only 7 till, folks. Don't get excited. Just 7 till. 53 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the guy who still can't tell time. We're having a good visit with our good friend Jim Copeland. He's a pretty good guy, pretty good hand at telling time. He knows how to use a clock. And he's with the Manhattan Institute, and that's manhattan-institute.org. Jim, quickly, what can small business owners do to keep ourselves out of court and out of trouble with the consumer protection laws?
Well, small business owners are going to have some advantages in that you're going to be located much more locally. So it really depends on what state you're in. There are a number of states that have sensible consumer protection laws. Some of them don't even necessarily have them, and some of them that do have them have tighter limitations where you actually do have to show some reliance or do show some injury, etc. So in those cases, you know, you're less likely to be a shakedown victim. If, on the other hand, you're in a state that has one of these loose consumer protection laws, you're potentially the victim of a shakedown. I mean, the California's 17200 law was notorious as a shakedown statute. I mean, my colleague Walter Olson wrote a Wall Street Journal op-ed about it, Stop the Shakedown, and ultimately California changed that law through the referendum process, Prop 64. They basically put in some of the tighter requirements on it. But in a number of states, there's not very much you can do if you're in a state like Massachusetts and you have one of these very loose consumer protection laws. You know, a lot of what I've been talking about are the big companies being
right.
taken to task. You know, the cigarette thing's interesting
because the law firms want the big bang for the buck. I mean, it's low percentage in going after small companies. They want to. Their goal is not necessarily these law firms. The tort or the plaintiffs bars. Their goal is not necessarily to help consumers. It is to get the fees for themselves.
Well, that's right. And so if you're going after Philip Morris or KFC's own, Yum Brands, which owns KFC, or if you're going after Kellogg, I mean, these have been big targets of these types of suits. They certainly act as taxes. In other words, they raise the price of the
right.
product that the consumer has to buy, but they're not going to basically knock these folks out of business. Although the light cigarette suit in Illinois actually put Philip Morris on the brink of bankruptcy until the Illinois Supreme Court put in an appeal bond reduction there because it was a $10 billion verdict. A lot of times the damages in these cases can be outlandish. But,
right.
but a small business owner is still subject to a shakedown, and what we saw happening in California was just that, because a lot of times these laws say it's $1,500, for instance, like the District of Columbia law says, for each incident.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, each time someone's bought something or each consumer who's bought something can claim $1,500, they can structure a class action very easily on behalf of everyone who's ever bought anything from you. So a small business owner, if you talk about $1,500 per product, basically the lawyers would send a letter. They didn't even have
right.
to file a suit. They'd say,
right.
if you don't want us to file this consumer protection
right.
law, give us X dollars and we can settle this case. If not, we're gonna go ahead and file, and this is how much money you've got at
stake. And there was a case where, and perhaps you mentioned it a minute ago, there was a case where they did that, and so those guys were actually caught and disbarred, weren't they?
In California, that's right, because there was some unseemly stuff
right.
going on.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, it's
Jim, let me stop you. Let me stop
right now aren't as much in the crosshairs as the big businesses, but if you're in one of these states with a bad consumer protection law, you know, I would be sitting there and talking to your state legislator, trying to get it reformed. The American Legislative Exchange Council, where I was speaking last week, which is basically the free market-oriented group of legislators. You know, they've got model legislation on this to try to fix your state consumer
protection. On your website, Jim, do you list states that are the worst?
We don't on our site, but I mean, certainly Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Illinois are
the three worst
bad ones. But
yeah.
but you know,
which state is an example of a good state for this? What would you say?
Well, California now is a pretty good state.
They've done
because
a better job.
They actually
good.
Reformed it through the referendum
oh,
process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in terms of a state-by-state breakdown, I mean, the American Tort Reform Association or the American Legislative Exchange Council that actually goes around working with each state,
right.
ALEC has model legislation, and ATRA works on advancing tort reform across
right.
the state. You know,
Jim,
folks are going to be able to tell you.
I got to wrap it up. Thank you for being here. Good job today, as always. Thanks for the good information.
Thank you.
Jim Copeland, ladies and gentlemen, with the Manhattan Institute. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll be back on the other side of the news with Joan Pride. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.